You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby.
From the Netherlands, this is the Green Planet Monitor, voices and stories from a warm, wet planet. Today, uranium mining in Niger, a filthy, toxic business.
We found radioactive scrap on the marketplace, radioactive rocks reused for road construction. Some houses have been made and are still made with radioactive rocks. We estimate that today there is probably 50 million tons of radioactive mud in the open air.
50 years after the end of America's war on Vietnam, traces of American chemical warfare linger.
Some people are advising the local people in this area that when they keep fish in the pond, for example, they should not eat the inside organ or the fat of those kind of fish, because they say maybe this fish still contaminate by chemical in the fat. Huh?
And the Anthropocene, a geologist talks about the definition he and his colleagues have come up with.
These sites in themselves, they represent, you know, a story that is building up all over the world, you know, of changed environmental conditions which are leading to changing geological signals in deposits of sediment and rock everywhere.
This is the Green Planet Monitor. Before diving in, a request: help us deliver this weekly package of Earth news. Subscribe and or donate at greenplanetmonitor.net. The mining, milling, processing, and enrichment of uranium for use in nuclear bombs, the testing of those bombs, their actual or threatened use against people, the use of uranium in power reactors, and the extraction of weapons-grade plutonium from those reactors has undermined relations between states, poisoned environments, stunted indigenous societies, sickened and killed countless millions, and alienated humans from the rest of the living world. Consider little Niger. The North African nation is the world's seventh largest producer of uranium. Massive volumes have been extracted over decades from an open pit mine operated by the state-owned French company Orano in the northern Nigerian town of Arlet. Niger's minority stake likely provides the country's military with a healthy income, certainly with a quantum of power when dealing with the French, who they claim to hate. Ordinary Nigerians get contaminated mine tailings, polluted air and water, and radioactive buildings. I spoke about uranium mining in Niger with Bruno Chacheron, a researcher with the French NGO CRIRAD, Commission de Recherche et d'Information Indépendante sur la Radioactivité. What are the working conditions like? What are the health conditions and the health profiles, the health status of workers, Nigerian workers working in Somaïr's open pit uranium mine in Arlet?
In fact, CRIRAD has been approached by a local NGO called Agirinman in 2002, because this local NGO included a lot of workers from the mines, both mines, Somaïr and Cominac. And those workers said that the impact of the mines was very bad on the environment, the fauna, the flora, and their health. They were feeling that a lot of them were getting sick, and they thought it was because of the uranium extraction. So CRIRAD organized a cooperation with the local NGO Agirinman. We gave them radioactive monitoring equipment, radiation monitoring equipment, and this NGO began to make some independent monitoring. CRIRAD also went there. We found radioactive scrap on the marketplace, radioactive scrap from the mine. We found that radioactive rocks had been reused for road construction. Some houses in Arlit have been made and are still made with radioactive rocks from the mine. We found uranium tailings in the open air. We estimate that today there is probably about 50 million tons of radioactive mud, so-called uranium tailings, which are produced by the mills which are connected to the mines. At a mine, you extract the uranium ore, and at the mill, this ore is crushed. There is a chemical process to extract the uranium, and what is left is called tailings. Those tailings are radioactive. It's above 400,000 becquerels per kilogram for the tailings of Cominac. And what was very shocking for us was to see that the tailings were in the open air without any protection. And today, it's still the case. Even if Cominac closed in March 2021, most of the tailings are still uncovered. We are talking about 120 hectares for the Cominac deposit of tailings. We cooperate with journalists that go there. We provided them with some monitoring equipment. So we know that you can still find radioactive scrap in the city. You can still have radioactive houses. And the waste, the tailings are still in the open air, either the tailings from Somaïr or the tailings from Cominac. So now, getting back to your question, what about the health status of the workers and the people? What we can say is that what is very bad in Arlit is the fact that for decades, the people are exposed to radiation in the air, to radiation in the water, to radiation sometimes because they bring radioactive material back home. So this exposure to radiation is at what we call very low doses, which is low doses, but still, it creates an impact on the body of the people because there is no safe level of exposure to radiation. This uranium, this polonium, this radon, those radioactive substances associated with uranium extraction are entering the body of the people either by inhalation or ingestion. And it's very obvious that some people will get sick because of this exposure to radiation. It's well known, for example, in France, where there is a follow-up of the health status of former French miners. It's well known and documented that you have a higher rate of death by lung cancer, by kidney cancer, when you're talking about uranium miners compared to the normal population.
Is anybody doing these sorts of epidemiological studies in Niger?
No, that's the problem. There is no epidemiological study performed either on the workers or the local population. And what is even worse is the fact that Orano says that they have set up a committee, including medical staff, to check the health status of the workers. And the conclusion of this group is nobody has ever been sick in connection with exposure to either radiation or chemicals in the mine or mills. The problem is that this group is completely under the control of Orano. So how can you imagine that you are at the same time the one that creates the pollution and the one that has to answer the question how many people will be sick because of this pollution? The way this group was organized was really a way to make media work without any scientific proper basis. It was really a good way for Orano to say, we are monitoring the health of our workers, but in fact, the way they monitor it is not scientifically serious. And it's very shocking. You even could laugh at it, thinking that Orano says nobody has ever been sick because of our activities, while everywhere in the world it's well known that uranium mining increases the health risks for the workers and also for the people that are exposed very early to radioactive dust or uranium in the water. I mean, the babies and the fetuses are exposed very since the very beginning of their life. And we know, it's well known, that young babies and fetuses are much more vulnerable to low doses of radiation than adults.
Are the workers in, Nigerian workers in Arawet, are they organizing themselves? Is the community organizing themselves and applying pressure to Orano? What's the position of the Nigerian government, which is, of course, now this military junta that's taken over there? Is anybody from the government applying pressure to Orano to clean up its operation, carrying out health studies? So we've got the two sides, the local workers, the community, and the Nigerian government.
Yes, the workers have some unions that try to improve their situation. But it's very difficult for the unions to win. And you also have local groups, including the one we are cooperating with, called Agirinman, which is doing a very good job. But again, the power of Orano is so huge, and the government of Niger is more on the side of Orano when we talk about environmental protection.
And of course, the Nigerian government has whatever 30-40% stake in the Arlet mine. Orano holds the majority stake, but the Nigerian government has a financial stake in it.
Yes, and you know, in Niger, uranium mining really infiltrates the authorities. You know that the former president of Niger, Mr. Issoufou, was a director of one of the Orano subsidiaries in Alit. So we can say that the connection between the company Orano, or the subsidiaries, and the authorities in Niger, the connection is very, very powerful.
Now, one wonders what role uranium mining, and there's also gold mining, I gather, in Niger, that the French government has a stake in. One wonders how Orano's uranium assets, French state-owned Orano's uranium assets in Niger, plays in the French government's position vis-a-vis this recent coup in Niger.
Yeah, for a few, more than 10 years now, the Nigerian authorities are trying to have more diversification, for example, for the uranium extraction. They are developing the connection with China, the connection with Canadian companies. They are really trying not to depend only on France and Orano. So the situation for Orano today is not the same than, let's say, 50 years ago. 50 years ago, France really had a monopoly, let's say, of uranium extraction in Niger. Today, it's no more the case.
But it's a filthy business, whoever is mining it. It's a dirty, ugly, corrupt business that subverts politics and subverts health. It doesn't matter whether it's the Canadians or the Chinese or the Russians who are mining uranium in Niger. It's a dirty, dirty business.
Yes, uranium mining is always a polluting activity, because while uranium is deep underground, 300 meters under the surface of the soil, if you leave uranium in the soil, the radiation at the surface is usually very low. But when you begin to extract uranium, you bring the radiation at the surface. And as uranium has a very long half-life, about 4.5 billion years, if you leave contamination of the soil, the waste, the water, the contamination will last very long. So uranium extraction is something very polluting.
Tell me about the journey that this uranium takes from the Arlet open pit mine in Niger to France. How does it get to France? It starts off as yellow cake.
Yes, the uranium concentrate called yellow cake is packed in metallic drums. Those drums are carried by truck to a port in Benin, in Benin. In Benin, yellow cake is carried on boats traveling to France. Then the material is sent to Malvézie in the south of France to convert this yellow cake into UF4, which is then transported either by train or truck to another nuclear facility in France called Tricastin, where this uranium is changed into a gaseous form of uranium called UF6, where it is then enriched. And then it will go to other factories to really manufacture the nuclear fuel, where uranium will be changed into uranium oxide to manufacture the fuel. And then this uranium will be used in nuclear reactors to produce electricity, and the spent fuel, the irradiated fuel, which is produced in the nuclear reactors, will be sent to another Orano factory called the reprocessing plant at La Hague in Normandy, where they will recover some of the uranium that is left in the spent fuel and the plutonium that is created by the fission of uranium. And this plutonium can be used for the manufacturing of nuclear weapons.
And France, of course, has a nuclear arsenal, nuclear weapons arsenal.
Yes, France, as you know, has a nuclear arsenal.
So all along this path from the Arlet open pit mine to the port of Benin as yellow cake and drums, and then by boats to Narbonne in France, and from there along this chain to Orano's various processing and enrichment plants. Again, this is an ugly, ugly business. There are accidents, there are leaks, there are... Tell me about this.
Okay, so what happened in the case of transportation of the yellow cake at the very beginning, beginning in Arlit, is the fact that sometimes the drivers of the truck were okay to accept people traveling on the yellow cake drums. Some people were sitting on the drums to have a transportation from Arlit to Niamey. But what the people were not aware of is the fact that the radiation emitted by uranium and uranium byproducts, alpha, beta, and gamma, can expose the people that are around the drums, especially gamma radiation.
And is this still going on? Do people still hitch rides on trucks?
I think no, because when we ask the question to our local contact, Agerinman, they say that this problem improved a little bit now, but it should be checked.
But then there are accidents, I would imagine. Trucks crash, they break down.
There are sometimes accidents, true, that is true. For example, a few years ago, there was an accident between Arlit and Niamey where some of the radioactive material was dispersed besides the road because the drums were opened. And we asked the local NGO, Agerinman, to go there and make some independent monitoring and send to us a small sample of the sand. And we found that even after the official decontamination of the road and the environment, yellow cake was still left on the soil. So yes, there are problems for the transportation of the material to France.
And environmental pollution in France, Bruno Chareron, further along this uranium road, in the course of processing and enriching, is this considered to be an environmental hazard in France?
In the case of France, the problem will begin at the uranium conversion plant in Malvézie near Narbonne. So at this plant, yes, there are pollution. For example, in 2004, there was a breach in a pile of radioactive waste from the facility, and the radioactive mud was dispersed in the plain. And it took Areva or Orano, it took more than 2 years to dig the waste and put it back to a storage. But Orano has no solution for the long-term storage of the radioactive waste produced by the conversion of uranium from yellowcake to UF4. It creates liquid waste and solid waste, and it's a big problem for Orano. Some of this liquid waste is left in open basins so that the sun will evaporate some of the contaminated water. Very recently, in order to extinguish a fire, an helicopter used the water from the basins, Orano basins, to carry it a few kilometers away to extinguish the fire. So some of the radioactive water was dropped in the environment.
In the south of France.
In the south of France, which it simply shows that the radioactive material produced by this Orano company is not managed properly. And for example, at Crerad, we monitored the amount of uranium in the leaves of trees around the facility, and we found that we can monitor an excess of uranium compared to normal, to natural, more than 2 kilometers away from the fence of the facility. So yes, uranium conversion is exposing the workers and the locals to radiation. It's true that the level of radiation is very low, but it does not mean that there is no impact. And in the case of this conversion plant, there is also a problem of contamination of underground water. And in the case of Niger, for Cominac, you have 20 million tons of radioactive tailings that have just been accumulating on the surface of the ground. Some of the chemicals and heavy metals in the tailings actually penetrated down into the soil and are contaminating even now the water below the surface. That's why in the case of Niger, the companies had to drill safety wells around the storage of waste to pump contaminated water and to inject it back to the facility. But they say in their documents that in a few decades, the pumping will no more be possible, and that there is a probability that the contaminated water underground circulates down to the place where water is pumped to produce potable drinkable water for the communities. So what is very crazy in this case of Niger is that you have deposits of radioactive tailings, which means that people are exposed to radioactive particles, radioactive dust, radioactive gas, radon, and the contamination is polluting underground water. So if you contaminate underground water resources, it's a problem for the very long term.
Bruno Chareron is a researcher with the French NGO CRIRAD, Commission de Recherche et d'Information Indépendante sur la Radioactivité. Listen to our complete conversation at greenplanetmonitor.net. While you're there, subscribe or donate or both. With your generous help, we'll keep delivering stories about planet Earth, human development, justice, and science to listen to, read, and watch. With the radioactive legacy of uranium mining, 11,000 kilometers to the east, Vietnam confronts the toxic legacy of what they call the American War. between 1961 and 71 in an attempt to eliminate forest cover and food supplies for North Vietnamese forces, the U.S. Air Force dropped 75 million liters of the defoliant Agent Orange across the southern end of what was then South Vietnam. Almost 30,000 square kilometers of forest and some 5 million acres of farmland got drenched. Agent Orange is a mixture of the herbicides 2,4-5-T and 2,4-D. Within that ugly brew, traces of dioxin, a toxic chlorinated organic compound that persists in soils and sediments and accumulates in fish that the Vietnamese people eat. As many as 4 million were exposed. Today, dioxin hotspots continue to be cleaned up at a handful of places where Agent Orange was stored and loaded onto planes. Here's a story I produced back in 2007. I'll update after. A balcony over the town of Alawe, near the border with Laos, provides a stunning view and a stunning example of the legacy of Agent Orange. Below, a valley stretches as far as the eye can see. 40 years ago, this was dense rainforest, a perfect route for Vietnamese revolutionary Ho Chi Minh's famous supply trail. To expose the trail and deny food to North Vietnamese troops, U.S. planes dumped tons of Agent Orange and other defoliants here. Today, the Alawe Valley is scrub brush. Beside me is Dr. Lee Van An, a professor at nearby Hue University. He studies the ecological legacy of what Vietnamese call the American War.
During the war, it was the social affected by different kind of bomb, including the chemical bomb. And now you see there no more tree. The hill still clean.
20 minutes down the valley near the hamlet of Asso, Dr. Lee points out a more chilling Agent Orange landmark, a former U.S. base where the herbicide was loaded onto planes or stored in 45-gallon barrels. Asso is one of Vietnam's four Agent Orange hotspots. To be precise, it's a dioxin hotspot. Agent Orange is long gone. Dioxin, a highly toxic ingredient, is more persistent. It clings to soil and pond sediment, working its way up the food chain.
Some people are advising the local people in this area that when they keep fish in the pond, for example, they should not eat the inside organ or the fat of those kind of fish, because they say maybe this fish still contaminated by chemical in the fat or in inside organs.
Vietnam's dirtiest dioxin hotspots are inside a Vietnamese military base in Bien Hoa near Ho Chi Minh City and right here at Da Nang Airport on the South China Sea. I've come here with a guide.
We are now in the north of the Da Nang Airport, where it used to be American air base.
More than 100,000 barrels of herbicide passed through Da Nang. Lots was spilled. Here, at the airport's northern end, dioxin in the soil percolates down a ditch and into a pond called Lotus Lake, where people fish and gather plants to eat.
I don't know exactly how many people who live in the north of the airport, but a few towns and houses. They still do fishing there, and something like vegetable as well, all right?
The Vietnamese government has set up a committee to deal with the country's dioxin hotspots. The coordinator is toxicologist Dr. Lee K. Son.
I can inform you exactly about the dioxin level in Da Nang and in other hotspots in Vietnam.
With the help of Canadian environmental specialists, soil dioxin in Vietnam's four known hotspots has been measured in parts per trillion, or PPT.
The level of dioxin in Da Nang Airport is highest. 1.7 has a level of dioxin with 350,000 PPT. It means